2368 will come to order, and we will have the staff read the summary of this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2368 makes technical and administrative changes to cigarette and tobacco product taxes to facilitate the administration and enforcement, and temporarily allows cigarette and tobacco product tax monies to be used to pay for administrative and enforcement expenses. It establishes tobacco delivery sale requirements and restrictions, and requires cigarette and tobacco product retail stocks to be located where they may not be accessed by store customers without an employee assistant. Before you have five amendments, the 39, 40, 41, 42, and 43.
And 44.
And Senator Minnis has the dash 44 amendments that he's making available to the committee. The dash 39 will be discussed by Marshall Koba, and I understand. The 40, 41, and 42 are related to Senate Bill 880, which was vetoed by the governor, which would have created a $100 million cap on the amount of an appeal bond required from a tobacco company in any litigation against the tobacco company. That's a party to the master settlement agreement, and I understand that the 43s are coming from the AG's office.
Okay, thank you very much. Committee, you have before you a survey of the states that have passed these caps. It's a three-page handout. They're all the way from $1 million to $100 million. We don't have state of California on here, which is at 150, I understand. Anyway, the average of this sheet comes out to $50 million. We're going to have some testimony now on these amendments. It is invited testimony only of people that have checked with me and presented their amendments. So we're going to start with Pete Shepard from the Attorney General's office. He will present the 43, C-43s.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pete Shepard. I'm the Deputy Attorney General. We're here in support of the printed bill and also in support of the C-43 amendments. Madam Chair, the C-43 amendments address what everyone who has been involved in the development of this bill and a related bill, House Bill 2094, recognizes as an oversight in 2094. 2094 provided generally an array of added enforcement tools to help the state enforce a statutory scheme called the Non-Participating Manufacturer Statute. That statute was adopted as an adjunct to the Master Settlement Agreement between the state litigating states, Oregon included, and various tobacco companies. And in enacting House Bill 2094, the state, by the way, the bill has been approved, as I understand it, and is now awaiting the governor's consideration. We provided for seizure and forfeiture authority to a limited extent in House Bill 2094, but everyone involved had intended to provide coextensive seizure and forfeiture authority for product that doesn't comply with the NPM statute, coextensive with that that applies to cigarettes on which the tax has not been paid, so that a revenue agent who is out doing a field inspection, for example, who observes product on which the tax has not been paid and sees next to it product which is distributed in violation of the NPM non-participating manufacturer statute would be able to take both packs of cigarettes off the shelf and initiate a seizure and forfeiture proceeding. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I've been surprised lots of times about various developments in relation to this and other bills, but I think I'm correct in representing the committee that there is no opposition to the C-43 amendments.
No opposition that showed up.
Well, as I say, there are limits to what I know about, but that's what I know about.
Madam Chair. Question, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pete, just want to confirm, when you say no one is opposition, I assume that if the governor then gets this bill, he will not veto it, at least because of the dash 43 amendments.
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, another of the lessons that I've learned in the course of dealing with these measures is I can only speak for the Attorney General's office. Everything else is really a prediction. And I would, on that front, I would say that in the governor's veto message, there wasn't any discussion of forfeiture authority, and I don't have any reason to think that that in itself would be anything that our office would cause our office to recommend a veto on the bill. And perhaps this is an appropriate time for me to indicate that I am aware of the C-44 amendments. And we've expressed our policy position regarding the cap question previously to the committee, and briefly it is that Oregon law is adequate for the purpose of according judges the discretion to set the amount of the supersedious undertaking. That authority is adequate to determine the proper undertaking amount in light of all the relevant facts. If the C-44 amendments were added to this bill, we would not recommend to the governor that he veto the bill. We recognize that there are many competing public policies at work here, including some of the ones I mentioned about the NPM enforcement and also about tax enforcement. And so as to our role in further developments in relation to this bill, our position is that we would not be recommending a veto.
Other questions?
Yes.
Representative Berger.
I just want to clarify. In other words, this C-44 does not state a cap of any kind?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my testimony is invited to explain the C-43 amendments, and I understand the chair has arranged for folks to make that presentation, but I would say we do not support the C-44s. They're not consistent with our stated public policy position. Nevertheless, we would not recommend that the governor veto the bill if they become part of the bill.
Further questions? Thank you very much. Next, we have Jim Gardner, who will, on behalf of one of these amendments. And, Jim, could you explain the cap briefly?
Yes.
What's happened?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner. I'm an attorney with the Gardner & Gardner Law Firm, appearing today for Philip Morris. And first, I would indicate that we do also support the C-43 amendments. They simply correct what amounts to a clerical omission that was intended to be included in the bill all along. And we would commend to your attention the C-44 amendments. This is a hard cap at $150 million level. It is essentially the bill that passed both bodies, Senate Bill 880, and then was vetoed with the amount increased from $100 million to $150 million. And as you may recall from the carrying speeches on both sides on this bill, this is an element that has passed in a number of states, most recently in California, at the $150 million level. It is not a limitation on damages. It is simply a limitation on the appellate bond amount to ensure that there can be an orderly appeal in the event of a massive damage award, awards of the sort that are very frequently either reduced dramatically or reversed on appeal. And I should also add, Madam Chair, that we have received assurances in accordance with the communication that Mr. Shepard referred to, that the Attorney General would not recommend a veto. We have had assurances that the governor would, in fact, not veto the bill at $150 million.
Question, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have a couple of questions, but I'll start with the first one. I understand, and looking through the list of states, that Washington is not on the list. Could you talk to me about why that is the case?
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, in Washington State, as I understand it, because of the separation of powers issue, the issue needs to be addressed by means of court rule amendment, appellate rule amendment. And in fact, there is a proposal now in front of the Washington Supreme Court for a cap at $100 million, which is pending.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I understand it, the C. Engross version of this bill grants a right of action to the attorney and to any private manufacturer to enforce both the delivery sales provisions of the bill as well as the escrow requirements in the MSA. The non-participating folks are concerned that this will be used by companies that folks like yourself represent as harassment purposes. Could you resolve my concerns about that issue, please?
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, placement of a private right of action in this bill to enforce both the delivery sales provisions as well as the escrow provisions, we feel is an essential element similar to the private right of action that exists within the state antitrust laws and the state unlawful trade practices law and many other similar statutes. The fact is that the Attorney General is asset limited in terms of how much enforcement they can bring to a statute like this, even with the best of intentions, and that is particularly true because some of the violations and problems arise in foreign venues where you will have, for instance, a manufacturer located, as is in fact the case, in Latvia or in a venue in China where the state simply will lack the resources to chase down the facts. And our companies, I think, can be an important supplement to the enforcement effort. We have no desire and no intention, and I would state that for the record, of using this important tool as a harassment device, but rather as a tool to ensure adequate enforcement of the law, and that I might add is also in the interest of the state of Oregon, because perhaps 40%, according to the Department of Justice's estimates, 40% of all cigarettes consumed in the state of Oregon right now are either unlawful, gray market, black market, untaxed, counterfeit, or in some other respect, illegitimate. And that's a huge problem for the state of Oregon in terms of collecting the revenue that's due it and the MSA money that's due it. So we need every tool that we can get, including a private right of action, to make that enforcement work.
Thank you.
Representative Berger.
I'd like to follow up on that just a bit. I realize that you're saying that there's no intent to harass. On the other hand, the large tobacco companies certainly made a big public relations mistake when they swore that it wasn't addictive. So I think there is some concern on the part of people as to they want to be sure that it's embodied somewhere in the law that you can't do that. So,
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, I think that if we were to engage in any kind of harassment tactic or malicious prosecution, there are ample remedies right now in terms of court sanctions and court fines and actions that could be brought against us, and I'm sure would be with great vigor and effort were we to engage in that. But I think that I can safely assure you that on the litigation front, that's not going to happen.
Further questions? Senator Minnis.
I just want to make a comment on this issue because I've had a longstanding opposition to the Attorney General using outside counsel for what's the right word? Fee-based, but it's based on the amount of the award or settlement, and you can help me here. Losing my word, contingency fee agreements. Because on the other side of this whole discussion is we have tobacco companies that have been sued by the attorneys general throughout the country. In an Illinois case, most recent, the remuneration to those outside counsels, $1.773 billion. no attorney general could have taken that on necessarily by themselves and been able to receive that kind of remuneration necessarily. So it, what I'm trying to say is that it goes both ways here. And the comment I think Mr. Gardner might want to respond to is whether or not if your companies were in fact harassing the non-participating manufacturers, wouldn't that create a problem for you in future legislatures where these companies might actually come back in and say, look, here's what's happening, and you ought to take this power away from them?
Madam Chair, Senator Minnis, absolutely. And I think that I think the effort will be to use our resources to help the state enforce this law. We've been working very in close cooperation in terms of chasing down the counterfeit problem and the illegal importation problem, in close cooperation with the Tobacco Enforcement Task Force that you wisely saw fit to establish, and we would continue to coordinate our efforts. And as Senator Minnis indicated, act with responsibility to make sure that we're using that, that authority wisely.
Senator Brown?
So it would be your position that the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure and the ORSs are adequate to protect against frivolous lawsuits brought for harassment purposes?
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, yes.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much. Next we'll have Marshall Koba, who will discuss the C-39s.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Marshall Koba, representing the Council of Independent Tobacco Manufacturers of America, CITMA. CITMA is a national trade association comprised of ESCO-compliant small tobacco manufacturers. Our members are non-participating manufacturers to the Master Settlement Agreement, and I am here today in support of the C-39 amendments to House Bill 2368. There's no question in the tobacco world there are white hats and there are black hats. I'd like to say that we are the white hat. We are compliant. There are a number of manufacturers out there that do not and have never had an intent to comply with escrow or the provisions of the Master Settlement Agreement. All the members of CITMA are compliant with the Master Settlement Agreement. We are suggesting two amendments to House Bill 2368, and if you may, Madam Chair, I've got a little bit of information here I'd like to run through. If you give me the time to do that, if not, I can hit the highlights. But I think there's are we on a pretty limited time frame here?
Can you do it in 5 minutes?
We'll see how far I get. These are fairness amendments only intended to maintain our ability to compete in the Oregon marketplace. They do not amend the original intent of the bill, nor do they affect in any way Oregon's share of the Master Settlement Agreement. In fact, we are confident our second amendment that amends House Bill 2094, which recently passed the House, offers more certainty regarding the Master Settlement Agreement payments to Oregon than is what is currently in House Bill 2094. Our first one, and it follows on the discussion we just had, which is the amendment to eliminate the right of action on escrow. And Senator Minnis talked about a case where there was $1.7 billion, and that's a nice sum of money. I think it's important to understand that there is no money here that will impact the general fund. We're talking about escrow money, which is money that the escrow compliant companies are putting aside for 25 years as they're part of the Master Settlement Agreement to pay any actions that may come against them. So we're not talking about general fund money. And we believe that there is a very open door here, and the intent of the majors could be to litigate us out of existence through this right of action, especially on the escrow. Currently, Section 82 allows our competitors, the major tobacco companies, to work with or independently of the Oregon Department of Justice to enforce tobacco-related law in Oregon. This provision, supported by the major tobacco manufacturers, was adopted by the House Revenue Committee under the auspices of assisting the Department of Justice with ensuring compliance by all manufacturers. This assistance would somehow result in additional money to the general fund. However, no figure has ever been discussed. This provision would also somehow deputize our competitors and their substantial legal department to potentially overwhelm our companies with nuisance lawsuits designed to make it very difficult for us to remain in the Oregon marketplace. Oregon tax laws provide that much of the information on which suits would be based is confidential to the company that files it. We believe the policy currently in Section 82 of House Bill 2368 that allows our competitors to hassle and to ultimately litigate us out of existence is poor public policy. will cost the state tax revenues and jobs that would otherwise be generated by our SIPMA members and their distributors and should be rejected. It's important for the committee to understand there's yet to be any discussion about how much money may be found. Recall that the escrow money are not state funds. What is the appropriate process for these rights of action, nor how the Department of Justice and the tobacco companies would work in tandem to go after compliant or non-compliant tobacco companies. These changes could lead to significant unintended consequences in regards to litigation regarding the MSA and the more than $70 million that we receive annually. The C-39 amendments will continue to allow the appropriate agency, the Department of Justice, to have the authority to enforce tobacco regulation in the state. The department testified that they have adequate tools with the addition of House Bill 2094 and 2368 to perform their duties in regards to tobacco regulation and enforcement. There's a significant paragraph there, but let me just jump down to the bottom. We oppose allowing our competitors to insist in the review of sensitive proprietary information that could be used to further erode our ability to compete in the Oregon marketplace. Our amendments fix this problem by allowing the Department of Justice, but not our competitors, to enforce the escrow compliance issues. However, the amendments will still allow our competitors to be deputized to assist in enforcing other tobacco-related laws. Thank you. So I think that the situation that Senator Menace was speaking about, the $1.7 billion, I don't know if that was escrow or not. I would assume it wasn't. It's a huge amount of money, which far exceeds any escrow money. So, again, it allows major tobacco, other tobacco, us, if we had, were so inclined, to help the Department of Justice enforce tobacco law. It's not something that SIPMA members, as a course of business action, would be prepared or interested in doing. So, again, no money to the general fund. Second amendment I'd like to talk about is the amendment to delay implementation to the allowable cap language in 2094. This will delay implementation until January 1, 2006, or when 32 other states have adopted similar legislation. 32 other states is 66% of the 46 states that have signed on to the Master Settlement Agreement. We believe the allowable cap is a blatant attempt, and I think the major tobacco companies will not object to this characterization, to use the legislative process to gain market share they cannot gain in the marketplace. Said another way, they are coming to the Oregon legislature and legislatures across the country to change the MSA in a manner which greatly increases our costs to the benefit of no one but major tobacco companies. This is unfair, a gross injustice to the implementation of the MSA, and will lead to litigation threatening the MSA payments to Oregon. And it's a very poor public policy statement to send to a segment of the business community that is lawfully selling legal products to consumers seeking these products. The delay in implementation of the allocable cap language will allow Oregon to determine the outcome of litigation in other states and be certain we are not jeopardizing our MSA payments. And to help back that up, if you go to the second staple, there's this Citigroup piece of information here. Citigroup, which is Smith Barney, which is a financial services sector business, and this is from June 9th, 2003. It's updated, I think, weekly, but this is the only one I've ever had. And if you go to the second page, I've highlighted in here, and there's a number of issues here, and so why would the Investment Weekly be concerned about what's going on in states unless you were a Philip Morris holder of stock and were interested in building market share? What it says, the allocable share definition, and I've highlighted one part, but the sentence before that says, this new legislation would modify the MSA and eliminate the cap release, thus requiring a compliant NPM to pay more per unit basis than all OPMs and SPMs. And highlighted the key, the purpose of this legislation is to force the compliant NPMs, my members, SIPMA members, to drastically increase their prices.
Madam Chair.
Senator Menace.
With all due respect to Mr. Marshall, all of these comments and the two amendments he suggested were presented to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Same arguments were made, and the Senate Judiciary Committee rejected them. And I think you might note that specifically one comment that Mr. Marshall stated with respect to the allocable share, and that was that it may lead to litigation that may jeopardize the Master Settlement Fund. Inherent in that very comment is a contradiction to their support for the C-39 amendment, which alleges that the larger corporations, the big guys, are going to sue them out of business. The fact of the matter is both the large and small companies are engaged in, for the most part, the very same business where the populations that they sell their product to are, for the most part, there's a prima facie case that they are addicted to the product. But the bottom line is they intend to sue the daylights out of each other, notwithstanding.
Thank you, Senator Minnis. You want to respond to that comment?
I'll try. Madam Chair, Senator Minnis, I think our interest in suing is to maintain our ability to compete in the marketplace. I think the major's intent in suing would be to remove us from the marketplace.
Are there other questions? Representative Berger.
Thank you. Mr. Coble, you have seen the position paper from the Department of Justice. Have you seen their opinion paper?
Chair Close, Representative Berger, there was something emailed out approximately 10 days ago, if that's what you're referencing to. I've seen that, but I haven't seen anything this morning.
This is something I've had for quite a while. I don't know if it was emailed or not. Doesn't look like it was emailed.
Madam Chair, may I continue?
Can you summarize it and wrap it up?
Certainly. Earlier this session, and I've got also in here, there was a piece of paper put out by RJR that talked about that NPMs, that payments are down to the Master Settlement Agreement because losses due to NPMs that are now at 13% instead of sales instead of 2%. I've added in the packet here but I've also added a MSA payment adjustment. The Master Settlement Agreement allows for the NPM adjustment. And we don't believe they need to come in to the state and change legislation. We believe that the Master Settlement Agreement already allows for an NPM adjustment. If they have a problem, it lays out a process, and that process is not to come to state legislature.
Thank you very much. Other questions? No. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next is Mark Nelson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing R.J. Reynolds Tobacco. I'll try to be very quick. I provide you some material and some information, and I'd like to bring your attention in particular to Mr. Koba's reference to the general fund of the state of Oregon. We believe very strongly that this legislation and House Bill 2094 will have a remarkable impact on the general fund in the state of Oregon, and I'd like to walk you through why. One of the first pieces I'm passing out is titled Oregon Master Settlement Payments Projected versus Actual. Prior to the Master Settlement Agreement, the MPM market share in this country was approximately 2%. Now it is approximately 13% in less about 6 or 7 years. And it is primarily because of the Master Settlement Agreement that we now have dozens and dozens of more tobacco companies in the process. You can see here in terms of our projection for Oregon, in terms of Master Settlement Agreement, $384 million. Actual is $320 million. We're down $64 million. And I don't want to lay this all to the feet of the MPMs. There are a variety of different things that are happening in this country since the Master Settlement Agreement. But the MPM legislation, or the MPM involvement in this market, has a major impact on the Master Settlement payments to the state. The second piece I provide for you is a rundown that has been put together by Mr. Kosasan, and some of you have seen this before. Since 1996, we've had a 236% increase in the tobacco taxes in this state. The actual revenue change or tax increase that we've actually received is only 89.26%. Again, this is a result, as Mr. Gardner has said, of gray market, black market, internet sales, NPM, non-compliance, as well as cross-border sales and other things that are taking place in the marketplace. But finally, and the third piece I provide for you shows the loophole that Mr. Koba has referenced in terms of the allocable share. Keep in mind the allocable share amendment that is now in 2094 and has passed that Mr. Koba wishes to repeal was adopted by the National Association of Attorneys General in consultation with the major participants in the Master Settlement Agreement. That agreement was predicated on NPM selling in 46 states, and that's what they were doing 8 years ago when they had 2% of the market. What has occurred, and this is occurring throughout the country in a multiple of different ways, is someone will come in and only sell in 4 states. And the example that we've given you here is California, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington, 1 million packs sold in those states. They pay into the escrow agreement, someplace between 27 cents and 35 cents into the escrow. They're required to do that. Okay? So in California, for example, they would have paid, under this scenario, $205,200 into the escrow agreement. Now, they're only selling in four states. So they come back and they say, okay, California, your share under the master settlement agreement is 12.76%. You see that down at the bottom under California. We only had to pay into the escrow account $34,463. You owe us a refund because those percentages were based upon they were selling in 46 states, but they've only sold in four. So out of the $270,000, they come back and they take back $170,737. This is happening throughout the country. This money is then used to go in and underprice the market because now they have not paid a comparable amount into the escrow agreement. And so what the allocable share amendment does is says whatever you sell in the state, that's what you're going to put in, and it's going to stay in. They get the money back at 25 years. So when they did the master settlement agreement, they made a mistake, quite clear and simple. And this amendment fixes that mistake and avoids the situation that just occurred in North Carolina where they paid over $8 million, one tobacco company, in to the escrow account and withdrew $7-plus million and because they only sold in two states. So that's what the allocable share amendment fixes. And it does have a marked impact on the state's general fund because if they don't pay into escrow, they undercut the market, and the participating manufacturers pay less into the master settlement agreement, and you get what you found in the first page, a $64 million hole in the state general fund. Again, from the master settlement agreement. This is not all allocable to the MPM. There are other forces, other variations on this theme, but that's why the alcohol share is so important. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Questions for Mr. Nelson?
Of course.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So do you agree with Jim Gardner that I believe it's ORCP 17 that the Oregon rules of civil procedure and Oregon statutes prevent frivolous and lawsuits being filed for frivolous reasons and for harassment purposes? Do you think our statutes are adequate?
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, I'm not an attorney. My understanding of those statutes is I think they are significant and that they will provide the kind of protection that Mr. Koba is concerned about.
Thank you. Madam Chair, just a
follow-up.
On the allocable share piece, I mean, I guess part of my concern here, I assume the NPMs were at the table when the master settlement agreement was reached. And if that's not the case, fine. But I guess when is a deal would be my question.
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, again, I don't have intimate knowledge of that process, but my understanding is that the NPMs were invited to participate as participating providers, that those that did not were not part of any of that discussion, that those were agreements that were made between NAG, National Association of Attorneys General, and the participating providers. To this day, non-participating providers can join, it's my understanding, can join and be a participating provider. I think there was a deadline, but I don't think it was on non-participating providers. I could be incorrect there. But and pay into the master settlement agreement. But again, I may be wrong in terms of whether there was a deadline there for them to apply. But I do believe they are looking at and have engaged in litigation on this issue.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Bridger.
Yes. I want to bring your attention to Section 72 and 82 of the bill, which in general addresses a lot of delivery of tobacco products to minors, and that's a big part of this. And I'm extremely interested in that part of the bill because I believe that that's one of the things that we've got to do, and that is prevention. I'm very disturbed at the rumor mill that keeps connecting large tobacco companies to the movie industry who are now featuring stars and celebrities smoking cigarettes. So I would just want to make the statement to you, Mr. Nelson, that as we work hard in Oregon to bring in all the money that we can for enforcement into our task force, that there's not any back door here with the large tobacco companies. And I don't often have a chance to express that to a large tobacco company. So since you're representing one, I just thought I would mention that to you.
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, thank you. And it's we worked very hard with the Department of Revenue and the Department of Justice on the formulation of this bill and the language and many, many work groups. And we totally support what's in 2368 as well as 2094, which I believe will provide a massive enforcement tool to recover what I believe is a loss of almost $100 million a year, and at the same time prevent the sale to minors through internet and other outlets.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Thank you.
That concludes our testimony on House Bill 2368. I'm closing the public hearing, and I'm opening a word session on House Bill 2368. Representative Patridge.
Madam Chair, I move the dash C-43 amendments to House Bill 2368.
Representative Patridge moves the dash, the C-43 amendments into House Bill 2368. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Patridge.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the dash C-44 amendments to House Bill 2368, much to my chagrin. I think the bonding amount is too high, and especially based upon the jury verdicts and other things in Oregon. But it appears that we have immovable issues on this.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Patridge moves the C-43s into House Bill
44.
Excuse me,
Madam Chair.
We did the 43s. This is the 44. Excuse me.
Just to assuage Representative Patridge's conscience, I don't believe there should be a cap. So, again, we meet in the middle.
All right.
The great thing about this process, further discussion.
Madam Chair, I frankly think 150 is too high, so that'll just throw all the on the table. But I have no objection.
The House versus Senate thing.
Yes, Representative Verger, a number of us in the House felt that 100 would be a fair cap, but the Senate has not agreed with us on that.
And looking at the other states, I would agree with you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative.
Aye.
Senator Brown.
Aye.
Representative Virgin.
Aye.
Senator
Minnis. Aye.
And Chair
Close. Votes aye. Motion carries. House Bill 2368.
We need to get moved to the floor.
Moved to the floor.
We need to
move the full motion.
Okay. Representative Patridge.
Madam Chair, I'd move House Bill 2368 as amended by this committee to the floor with the to the respective floors with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Patridge moves House Bill 2368 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Patridge.
Aye.
Senator Brown.
Aye.
Representative
Virgin. Aye.
Aye. And
Chair Close. Both sides. Motion carries.
I'll carry this one.
Okay, Senator Minnis will be the carrier in the Senate.
Okay. I can't.
Okay. Representative Patridge will carry in the House.
And I've got paperwork for you to sign.
And will everyone stick around and sign the papers? And with no further discussion, we are adjourned.
Okay, I'm just...